If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to Above the Fray. I'm Carol Gold. Our number here is 914-803-4522. I co-host this show with Steve Clark. Let's get Steve on the line. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Okay, so Steve, there's obviously an event that's unfolded, took place unfortunately yesterday and is unfolding today in Charleston, South Carolina, and it is the murder of six innocent people by a 21-year-old who, at this point, I don't even want to call him a racist, because what I do know about him as of right now is that he was a pill popper, that he was known to take Xanax and a drug called Suboxone, which is a what they call an SSRI class drug. It is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, and what that means is that it is a drug that some people take to get off of addictive drugs. It is an opiate. It is addicting, but it's used to wean people off of more addicting drugs, and it allows the serotonin, the mood, if you will, regulator of the brain, to remain in the brain in a more stabilized fashion, in order to calm moods or even them out. In fact, what we know is that those drugs often cause violent behavior. There are websites where there are forums that people just come to join to talk about their horrific experiences on Suboxone and other similar class drugs. So, Steve, today when I heard the president make his comments about this, I was disappointed but not surprised about two things. One, he made it about, using code language, he made it about race, because he said that something to the effect of, in communities like these, we've seen too much of this. In communities like these, this community is a black community. So he's talking about this kind of mass shooting in communities like these. Number one, I'm unaware of a plethora of mass murders going into black communities and killing large amounts of black people at a single time. Number two, he also absolutely just simply turned it into a gun control issue. And personally, I think the much bigger issue is the excessive use of prescription drugs and non-prescription drugs in this country. And I'll just say for our listeners, Steve, that if anyone wants to listen, after the actor Heath Ledger overdosed, and his was not an attempted suicide, his was an accidental overdose of mood-altering drugs. When he had that happen and he died as a result of that overdose, I did a national radio interview, which can be listened to on my website at Carol, CAROLEGold.com. If you go to my website and you click on speaking engagements, and then you click on the one, there's a list of topics that I speak to, and one of them starts off reigniting hope. When you click on that page, what will automatically open is a one-hour interview that I did nationally, because I have spoken on depression, suicide, and drug addiction all of my adult life, because I went through withdrawal from an antidepressant, and I tried to commit suicide in my 20s, around age 24. And so this is a topic that I'm very, almost too familiar with from personal experience. So, Steve, what I really want to talk about isn't the gun control issue, because I'm certain that if we make guns illegal, the only ones that will have them are the criminals and the bad people. I really want to talk about the overdose and the overuse of prescription medications in this country, and how that is really a precipitating factor because let me just end with this, Steve. This particular drug, suboxone, has been known to, it on as little as 8 milligrams, throw someone into violent, irrational behavior. So I'm not so sure this kid was a racist. I am sure that he was on mood-altering drugs that had a profound effect on his brain and causes irrational thought and obviously violent and irrational behavior. Steve, what do you want to say about this?
Well, Carol, before I start, I'm just curious, can you elaborate a little bit more on the drugs? I've been following the story. I haven't been able to find out any of the information that he was on drugs. That was my natural inclination before anything came out. I didn't see that anywhere. Can you just let us know where you found that information that he was on drugs?
Yes, I believe that both Breitbart.com and Drudge are reporting, the FBI and some others have spoken with people who knew him, people who went to school with him. I got the impression, at least if the reporting was accurate, that he didn't go beyond ninth grade, that he dropped out of school without cause. I also read that he was very isolated. He had very few friends. He kept to himself. He wasn't perceived as a racist by people who knew him, although they said he made comments, but they were kind of like joking comments that someone might make who was not so much a racist, but more, you know, more, let's say, less educated. And no one ever thought he was serious when he made comments like that. I think it's very easy to make the leap that whatever opinions he might have held, even in a non-racist fashion or a mildly racist fashion, if there is such a thing, those drugs could have easily accelerated and exaggerated to the point where they caused him to have hallucinations and perceptions and opinions and that were not otherwise his at the level at which he would have had them not on the drugs. So I've read that his parents were somewhat concerned. He spent a lot of time in his room on Xbox, which, again, it's another argument, you know, when we talk about all the use of video games and how they skew reality. If you're going to combine somebody who's excessively using video games or Wii with someone, with and that person then exacerbating whatever their brain is doing by then using mind-altering drugs, who's surprised at irrational, erratic, and violent behavior?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that analysis. When that story first came out, my first impression was that it was not a gun issue, that it was either a drug issue or a mental illness issue. I mean, let's just throw out race for a second. Anybody who has the capacity to go in and shoot 9 unarmed people, whoever they are, there's something that is inherently very disturbing. And then just the nature of the way the whole action took place. He sat down there for an hour. Clearly, you'd have to think that something was happening in his brain that altered reality a little bit. And then just the notion that he would do something like that, I just immediately thought it was drugs. I've been fascinated for years, you threw in the point, the video games, but I think there's kind of a deadly combination, a deadly way that our culture's evolved that nobody talks about, but I think really does have a tremendous impact. I think it's a combination of the drugs where, if you haven't seen this week's Time magazine, they brought up an interesting point that I didn't really realize, that In the mid-2000s, what a lot of people were complaining about was the fact that a lot of people had, normal aches and pains, and the drugs that were available to them didn't offer them any real relief. And so what they came out with is, the drug companies pushed for drugs that were called, like, pain medication drugs. And so what they were able to do is they were able to get doctors.
Pain management,
exactly. Excuse me. So they were able to get doctors now to prescribe drugs for pain management, but at the same time, the drug companies came out and began to offer much more powerful pain management drugs. So it was kind of a combination of two things, people having more pain and the drug companies producing more powerful drugs. And it led to this group of people, or I should say group, a large segments of different parts of the population in the U.S., they're now addicted, are now addicted to pain. These drugs, they're essentially opiate types of drugs. And you know, I'm going to veer off on one tangent. There's a phenomenal movie a few years ago that came out with Keanu Reeves. It's Alex Jones, which actually goes into the whole drugging of America, and it's way ahead of its time. And Robert Downey Jr. It's done in this kind of cartoonish sort of way, but if you watch the movie now, it's almost like a predictive science fiction movie. What they believed which was coming. I just want to add in two things because we can really go really deep into this conversation. But I think it's also that you touched on. It's an element of this fantasy world that we live in with a lot of the kids and their teens where they kind of check out, and instead of playing outside, they check out with the Xbox, which a lot of them are very much so personal shooter games, and you have the ability to, you know, basically, you know, live in these kind of alternate worlds where you detach from everybody else and you play these games for hours on end. And I want to say that, you know, the deadly other mix that this kind of this altered view of reality and society is then you add in the whole element of pornography, which a lot of the youth, especially young males, watch, and that kind of skews the reality. So I just think these things are, let's call them what they are. You know, the drug business is a billion-dollar business. The porn industry is bigger than, you know, it's the largest entertainment company in the world, right, that industry. And then you throw in another massive industry, which is the gaming, which are all things that alter realities and alter the way that we perceive realities. I think that's the more compelling story versus just like you said, that, you know, it's a gun issue and it's a racist thing, which I don't think that it is. What do you think, Carol?
I'll tell you, Steve, let me add to what you're saying. You know, you mentioned the factors that you think play in this, and I'm going to add yet another factor, and that's the media. Because drug companies, regarding the class of drugs that we're talking about now, these pain management drugs and these opiate and these addicting drugs, for those classes of drugs, pharmaceutical companies spend $2.4 billion a year on television advertising for those classes of that class of drugs. $2.4 billion on television alone. So the conflict is TV needs that revenue. They can't run specials and do reports about how bad those drugs are, or they're going to lose the advertising money. And so there's another factor there, that the media is not, again, fulfilling its fourth estate obligation to bring information to the public that is truthful, that is not biased, that doesn't have an agenda, and that they're playing that conscience role for the public outside of government and even outside of big business. They are completely corrupted in that regard. So in every other way, you know, there's so many shows we talk about, Steve, the media and what they do and how poorly they do it in relationship to politics. But this is another example. This is just like Brian Williams on air when he used to do special consumer reports on light bulbs, the non-fluorescent, the halogen bulbs, because what he didn't fail to disclose when he would do those, quote, objective consumer reports is that the station he was reporting from was owned by General Electric. And so GE was at the time and still the largest manufacturer in this country of those halogen bulbs. And so he had a conflict of interest, and he was in a news position where he was abdicating responsibility. Now, Brian Williams turns out to be a joke in terms of what his ethics are. However, I'm making the point about the drug industry and the conflict the media has. In addition to that, Steve, I don't know if you know who – do you know who Dietrich von Hildebrand is?
I don't.
Dietrich von Hildebrand, I listened to an interview of his wife last night. She's 93 years old. Dietrich von Hildebrand, her name is Alice von Hildebrand. He was a Catholic in Nazi Germany, And along with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a Lutheran pastor, Dietrich von Hildebrand tried to take out Hitler. He tried within the Catholic Church, not just within the German population, the culture at large. He even tried within the Catholic Church to warn about, speak about, and take Hitler out. He was Dietrich Bonhoeffer's co-conspirator, if you would, in trying to, literally, they were going to try to assassinate Hitler. And so, or have him assassinated. Bonhoeffer never got out. He was executed by the Nazis, shot before a firing squad. Dietrich von Hildebrand and his wife Alice managed to escape. They came to the United States. There's actually a website called the Hildebrand Project, which outlines this brilliant man's Catholic philosophy, his Catholic belief, his belief systems. But to listen to his wife, the thing that she said, she at 93 years old, she's the closest thing to something angelic I've ever listened to. But the thing that she said about the media, she said to the man who was interviewing her, if the media understood the power that it has and the position it's been given, it would tremble. Anchors would tremble. Reporters would tremble before they ever stepped in front of a microphone if they understood the power they've been graced with. And what we have is a culture that we have such a corrupted media and we have such irresponsibility behind a microphone and we have such disregard for what we say and the power of the word written and spoken that it's not only a compounding factor in a story like this about what's happened in South Carolina, because what you're not hearing the media say is that, take a look, there's no rioting there right now. There's no burning down of stores. This is a very different community than Ferguson or Baltimore. And even though, what's his name, Al Sharpton jumped on a plane last night, as I like to say, faster than you could say Black Lives Matter, and got on the ground in Charleston, he's been unable thus far. You haven't heard a word yet about him ginning up everybody and getting riots going and blaming the white person and blaming the white race, because Charleston, number one, the church in which it happened, is the oldest black church in the United States. Number two, the city of Charleston is known as the Holy City, because there are no buildings in Charleston taller than church spires. So what you see, I understand, because I've never been there, is a skyline, basically a city of church spires, which is why it's called the Holy City. That and the people really walk the talk there. So the black community isn't rioting in Charleston today. They're praying. They're joining arms and praying the same way the Quakers prayed and reacted when that gunman came in and shot those Quaker children in the schoolroom. There's a lesson to be learned here, and it's not about guns at all. It's about the human heart, and it's about our responsibility to drugs, to doctors who prescribe these things, to a war on drugs that's been a joke, to the importation of illegal drugs across our border because our borders are porous, to the multi-billion dollar industry that is co-opted by government and the drug cartels because they're in business together too. There's so much that we have responsibility for that we are living blind to our own contribution and our own responsibility to the fiction that we say we're living, but we're not living at all. We're living some other reality that is in fact a very dangerous world that we've created here. And I'm hoping at least that Charleston remains calm and remains prayerful And I know Alveda King is going there tomorrow. Glenn Beck and his wife and his family are going there tomorrow. Glenn Beck has called for everyone and anyone who can go on a bus, a train, a plane, and come to Charleston and pray. But first, he's asked them to take the oath that Martin Luther King made everyone take before they marched with him. And it was a literal written oath that of like 10 points. And of course, nonviolence and being prayerful and contemplating the Bible were all part of that oath. I'm hoping that we can see a different outcome in Charleston. Steve?
I think you're spot on. The thing that you know that I'm most concerned about is that you know the media or however you want to say it, they went back to the same narrative. And when I first saw the news, you know, obviously it's very disturbing, but it's even more disturbing because it fits into the narrative the media wants, and it fits into what I believe is you know, I almost want to say it almost fits into the grander and bigger scheme, the more sinister scheme that what I believe is that there's a continual movement within the U.S. and a continuing movement by the progressive left to always divide. That's the playbook, divide. And it's their source of power. And if you have a story that fits so nicely to it, you know, angry white youth kills innocent black people, that fits the narrative. It gets more power to Al Sharpton, gets more power to the media, it gets more power to the to the base of the different bases that fundraise off this, and it basically it continues to tear America apart. And so what you have is you have what I call you know a large segment of the population that is I would call a little bit that lives in a cloud that doesn't really understand all the issues, and they are very susceptible to the messages by the media, and they're fed a belief that it's a racist country. They're fed a belief that it's unfair, that it's unjust. And it just feeds a larger problem that I think Obama is really quite good at exploiting. And I think people of his ilk are really quite good at exploiting and fanning the flames of violence. And, you know, I think at this point, after Trayvon Martin, after the incident with the other incident in South Carolina where they actually shot where a white policeman shot a black man,
yes, Jackson. I think the last name was Jackson.
Yeah, and I mean that one is legitimately it was a terrible offense by the officer, and now you have you know the incident in Missouri. I just think it comes at the worst possible times, and I could tell you, having lived in a major city, and I grew up right next to a housing project. These cities are dangerous. They're very you know they're people forget. You know, I grew up in the 70s in New York City. And I can tell you, they are not pleasant places to be in. They can be quite violent, and they can get really out of hand quite quickly. And I think we're at an element that we're getting close to that. We're getting close to where I wouldn't be surprised if we had a massive riot somewhere. You know, we've already had some in Baltimore, but I could see something like that really you know happening in more major in other major cities. And I'd almost want to say, you know, that this almost seems like a plan. It almost seems like it's being orchestrated. I don't think this case was, but I just think it's just a remarkable series of events that have happened over the last 6 months that is really quite disturbing and depressing.
Well, let me attack that last because I want to end on a positive note. So remind me of what you said, that a confluence of events in the last 6 months in case I forget and that it's depressing. Before I go there, I just want to say you are absolutely correct, and I'm with you 100% when you said that, you know, there is a progressive mindset to divide in order to conquer. You know, I can't believe with a black president that he isn't constantly talking about the murders of black on black in Detroit and Chicago, we lose teens and young adults and middle-aged adults on a daily basis in those cities in black-on-black crime, shooting with illegal guns when there's no there are no guns in Chicago. Chicago has it's a gun-free city under law. I mean, it is unbelievable to me that this president comes out on an event like this that just happened, and he does divide very gingerly with his choice of words when he talks about, as I said, there's too many of these events in communities like these. That's, as far as I'm concerned, he's talking about black communities. And when he talks about, turns it instantly into another reason for gun control, he's dividing. He's putting the gun advocates, he's putting the Second Amendment people up against the liberal gun control people. And again, he never fails to divide. It's one of the things I find most offensive about him. But let me quickly say, along that line, David Oren was the former Israeli ambassador to the United States, and he just came out with a book. And in that book, he says that Obama is not anti-Semitic, and he is not anti-Israel. That Obama's problem isn't Israel. Obama's problem is America. He said Obama so dislikes America and its history, and he came into office so determined to do something about that, that he made enemies of our friends and friends of our enemies because he wanted to show that this country was undoing or trying to undo all the wrong it has done. And he said, this is coming from an Israeli ambassador saying he's not anti-Israel, he's not anti-Semitic, he's anti-American. And I don't find that the slightest bit shocking. I only find it shocking that someone in a position of authority to know who interacts with this president was bold enough to say it. The note I want to close on, Steve, is you said that in the last 6 months, events that have taken place that you find a little depressing. There's another way to look at the last 6 months and maybe even the next six, because I think we're in for a rocky road with both Greece and here in the United States. The way to look at it is, you know, it's that old expression, it's not what happens to you, it's how you handle it. We have a choice in everything that's happening to us right now. Every generation has its cross to bear. This is ours. We are going through a cultural change. Do we have a revolution of violence, or do we have a spiritual revolution? Do we turn events into the reactions of Ferguson and Baltimore, or do we turn our reactions into the actions of the Quakers in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and the black community in Charleston, South Carolina? I think the events are divinely orchestrated, quite honestly, because I think the test is ours. I think we're being tested. And rather than be depressed and look at it like a hopeless situation, I think it behooves us to look at this as an opportunity to get it right once in human history, to understand that the Gandhis and the Jesuses and the Martin Luther Kings knew the answer, and that you don't have to be that remarkable. You just have to be that committed to getting it right. And I think if enough of us are, we will get it right, but it's clearly up to each and every one of us. So I hope, Steve, that punctures a little bit of your depression. And with less than a minute, you have something to say? We have about a minute and a half.
No, I just want to say it was well said.
Oh, thank you, Steve. High praise indeed. So I just want to give credit where credit is due. I did talk to Steve this afternoon, and he absolutely did think that this kid was on drugs before I ever got the actual news reporting that he was. So Steve saw this for what it was from the get-go. The only person apparently who can't is President Obama. Maybe we should have elected Steve Clark in 2008, in 2012. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And thank you for listening to Above the Fray. Continue to spread the word. We're here to do the best we can for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.